Welcome to The Weekly Listen, an Engelsberg Ideas podcast brought to you by the Axel and Margaret Axon Johnson Foundation and produced by Brooke Verlaget Stolper. The Weekly Listen features our essays, read by Leighton Pugh.
Learning from History, Maurizio Veroli. Historia vero testis temporum, lux veritatis, vita memoriae, magistra vitae, nuntia vetustatis est. History is the witness of time, the light of truth, the life of memory, the teacher of life, the herald of antiquity. Cicero, De Oratore, Book 2, Chapter 9, Section 36. Often shortened as Historia Magistra Vitae, history is the teacher of life, Cicero's principle became one of the main tenets of Italian Renaissance culture, and in particular of Republican political thought. What exactly can we learn from history? And how? Is the wisdom that we can get from history still valuable for us? These are the questions I intend to discuss in this essay. From history, we can learn, to begin with, political ideas and political visions. Our intellectual history offers us many examples of political writers who have elaborated their theories by working on texts of the past. The most famous is surely Niccolò Machiavelli. In the preface to his Discourses on Livy, he gives us a clear sense of what he meant by learning from history. Nonetheless, in ordering republics, maintaining states, governing kingdoms, ordering the military and administering war, judging subjects and increasing empire, neither prince nor republic may be found that has recourse to the examples of the ancients. This arises, I believe, not so much from the weakness into which the present religion has led the world, or from the evil that an ambitious idleness has done to many Christian provinces and cities, as from not having a true knowledge of histories, through not getting from reading them that sense, nor tasting that flavour that they have in themselves. What is the sense we should be distilling from history? What is the flavour we should taste? By sense, Machiavelli intends the meaning and the rules of political prudence that history offers to those who know how to read it. By flavour, he means the inspiration to act. To learn political wisdom from history means that we learn how to make good political judgments on our times and our problems. We can learn from the past the meanings of our times. When we grasp, "What the hell is going on there?" to borrow a fine phrase of the great anthropologist Clifford Geertz. History is not useful because it provides us with a more or less complete collection of facts, but because we can extract from history's rules of political conduct. As Machiavelli puts it, "Whoever considers present and ancient things easily knows that in all cities and in all peoples there are the same desires and the same humours, and there always have been. So it is an easy thing for whoever examines past things diligently to foresee future things in every republic and to take the remedies for them that were used by the ancients, or, if they do not find any that were used, to think up new ones through the similarity of accidents." Of all histories, Machiavelli clarifies in his preface to his Florentine Histories, "the histories of our own fatherland are particularly useful." What Machiavelli teaches us is that we can understand our times by comparing the events that we see with similar situations that have occurred in the past. History sheds light on the present. It permits us to see meanings or patterns of our times that we would not be able to see without her help. But how, in practice, can we learn from history? Histories as pure recollections or explanations of past events teach nothing about our times and our problems. To shed light on our present, history needs to be interpreted by us. Without our interpretive effort, without our reflections on history, the past is silent, a mere object of curiosity, not a guidance for political action. At this stage of my argument, I must resort to the help of Francesco Guicciardini, 1483-1540, the other great political theorist of the Italian Renaissance. In his Maxims and Reflections, a text in which he collected and never published his considerations on moral, historical, and political matters, he remarks that it takes sharp and discerning eyes, buono e perspicace occhio, to identify the right analogies between past and present events. A small difference between two political contexts makes all the difference in the world. Solutions that worked in the past can be totally inadequate, indeed damaging, for the present. What does Guicciardini mean by "it takes sharp and discerning eyes"? He suggests that we must ask what is left of the past, histories, chronicles, biographies, choose the right questions, select the relevant documents, and make a special intellectual effort to see beyond the surface of historical documents. We learn from history, that is, by interpretation, not by mere observation or compilation of facts. Interpretation is more modest than science. It does not pretend to give us infallible laws or rules. It provides us with just the best available light, a light that does not make us infallible, but helps to avoid great mistakes. The other way in which history teaches us is by offering us the possibility to be inspired to act. Whereas political wisdom concerns the mind, inspiration touches our imagination, moves our passions, affects our will. Wisdom is a light that illuminates and scatters darkness. Inspiration warms up and scatters the passions that incline us to remain inactive. To illustrate the idea that history offers us inspiration, I turn once again to Machiavelli. No one should marvel if, in speaking, as I will do, of principalities that are altogether new, both in prince and in state, I bring up the greatest examples. For since men almost always walk on paths beaten by others and proceed in their actions by imitation, a prudent man should always enter upon the paths beaten by great men and imitate those who have been most excellent, so that if his own virtue does not reach that far, it is at least in the odor of it. To provide inspiration, biographies are especially useful. As regards the exercise of the mind, the prince should read history, and therein study the actions of eminent men, observe how they bore themselves in war, and examine the causes of their victories and defeats, so that he may imitate the former and avoid the latter. But above all should he follow the example of whatever distinguished man he may have chosen for his model, assuming that someone has been specially praised and held up to him as glorious, whose actions and exploits he should ever bear in mind. By reading histories and meditating upon them, men and women, some of them at least, have aspired to accomplish something as glorious as the achievements of the men and women of the past that they admire. In many cases, however, the inspiration does not translate into a longing for glory, but into the commitment that comes from affection, from a sense of gratitude for our ancestors. We want to preserve and enrich the political institutions and the way of life that our fathers and mothers and grandfathers and grandmothers have created or preserved with their efforts and their sacrifices. The study of history, in particular the history of our countries, of the memories of the defeats and the humiliations, as well as of the victories in the struggles for liberty and social emancipation, have been and can be in our times powerful sources of civic consciousness. Without an intelligent study and an intelligent reflection of history, civic consciousness is bound to decline and perish, and with civic consciousness deceases political liberty. Guicciardini warns us to be very careful when we try to imitate the examples of the past, however. How wrong, Guicciardini writes, it is to cite the Romans at every turn. For any comparison to be valid, it would be necessary to have a city with conditions like theirs, and then to govern it according to their example. In the case of a city with different qualities, the comparison is as much out of order as it would be to expect a jackass to race like a horse. Times change. Institutions and political actions that have been successful in the past may not work in our times. We must take Guicciardini's wisdom seriously. Still, the inspiration that comes from the study of history retains its value insofar as it encourages us not to replicate submissively and uncritically the examples of the past, but encourages us to accomplish something as glorious as the deeds of the men and women of the past we admire. To learn political wisdom, we need political theorists who are good at interpreting histories. Whom do we need to learn inspiration? We need poets and prophets, my mentor Machiavelli teaches us. A story that Machiavelli reports in the Florentine Histories is particularly illuminating. Living at that time was a Stefano Porcari, early 1400 to 1453, a Roman citizen, noble by blood and by learning, but much more so by the excellence of his spirit. This man desired, according to the custom of men who relish glory, to do, or at least to try, something worthy of memory, and he judged he could do nothing else than try to see if he could take his fatherland from the hands of prelates and restore it to its ancient way of life, hoping by this, should he succeed, to be called the new founder and second father of that city. The dissolute manners of the priesthood and the discontent of the Roman barons and people, and some verses encouraged him to look for a happy termination of his enterprise. The verses Machiavelli is referring to are from a canzone by Petrarch that ends with this prophetic vision. Atop Mount Tarpeio, O canzone, you will see a knight whom all Italy honors, more thoughtful of others than of himself. These words inspired Stefano Porcari, Machiavelli tells us, because he believed that many times poets are filled with divine and prophetic spirit. He judged that he was the man destined to be the executor of so glorious an undertaking. Petrarch's prophecy did not come true. Stefano Porcari was captured and executed. He lacked political judgment, Machiavelli remarks. However, he also recognizes that poetic prophecies have the power of inspiring the political action that attempts to redeem peoples from servitude and corruption. We should indeed rediscover both ways of learning from the past, learning political wisdom and learning inspiration. Together, wisdom and inspiration provide the intellectual and moral tools we need to accomplish great political deeds. Political leaders and citizens who are prudent but lack political inspiration are normally good only at gaining and preserving their power. Political leaders who have the right kind of inspiration but lack good judgment have excellent intentions but often fail, and their failures have tragic consequences for their peoples. It has always been a blessing for all countries to have political leaders who have the intelligence and the humility and the skills of learning from history. Today we need them more than ever because we are facing nationalism, a danger that has a long history, a force that has devastated, about a century ago, many liberal and constitutional regimes in Europe. As we all know, nationalist ideas, movements, and parties are becoming stronger and stronger. We learn from history that nationalism is very powerful because it touches fear and hatred, two potent human passions, and because it addresses deep and widespread needs of the popular classes. The need of speaking one's national tongue, having a cultural identity, belonging to a community, sharing memories and hopes, being understood and respected, believing to be better than other peoples, being citizens of a powerful state, or even better, of a great empire. A good lesson we should draw from history is not to underestimate the strength of nationalism. Let's not indulge in the comforting thought that nationalism is just a temporary malaise that will soon fade away. Nationalist demagogues are particularly good at attracting the support of the citizens with lower income and poor culture. They are the majority of voters. They can easily bring to power their nationalist leaders. Nationalist rhetoric is very effective with isolated, disconnected individuals. We know that European and American citizens are much more disconnected than their parents and their grandparents. Being connected through the internet is not the same as being an active member of a union or a political party or a cultural association or a church. We also learn from history that the language and the principles of cosmopolitanism, though ethically noble and intellectually refined, are unable to counter nationalism. They appeal only to a very selected social and intellectual elite of men and women who can live anywhere in the world. Cosmopolitanism may be very attractive for them, but if you tell citizens who do not speak foreign languages, do not travel, and feel socially marginalized that their affection for their national identity is irrational and unethical, and that they should live their lives as citizens of the world, I doubt you will bring them on your side. We learn from history that the old socialist internationalism cannot stand the attack of nationalism. We must also acknowledge the ideal of a European unity, at least in the way it has been so far translated into policies, is very vulnerable to nationalist rhetoric. This is just a very tentative account of what history could teach us concerning the most serious, for me, political challenge of our times. It truly seems to me that we cannot afford not to rediscover the fine art, nowadays almost forgotten, of learning from history.
Thank you for listening to the Engelsberg Ideas Weekly Listen, read by Leighton Pugh. This podcast was brought to you by the Axel and Margaret Axon Johnson Foundation and produced by Buchverlaget Stolper. For more writing from the world's leading thinkers on history and culture, featuring essays, historical portraits, and regular podcasts, visit engelsbergideas.com.